This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, in Westminster, there was an extraordinary occasion. The Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, was obliged to come to the House of Commons at leaders' questions. He made a brief statement before he took questions, but he had to account for a series of parties and breaches in lockdown rules, in particular on the 20th of May 2020, when Britain was under severe lockdown and people were obliged to see nobody outside of their own household except for one other person, and they had to be socially distanced by 2 meters on punishment of fines from the police on what was effectively a criminal matter. At that same time, on that same day, the principal private secretary of Boris Johnson sent an email to around 100 people inviting them to a party at Downing Street, or an event at Downing Street, which would begin at 6 p.m, and people were told to bring their own bottle. It was a bring your own bottle party because it was such a beautiful summer they were having, and that day in particular was believed to be very beautiful. At the time, people were not able to bury their dead with any real ceremony. They couldn't see their dying relatives. They couldn't go into care homes. They had to stand at windows and wave to people. It was a truly difficult time for people in Britain, in particular on that time scale. And of course, we know from our own experiences here, it was a difficult time for everyone, but not, it appeared, for the Prime Minister in his home at 10 Downing Street. To discuss yesterday and Johnson in general, we're joined now by one of Britain's most distinguished journalists. Peter O'Byrne is an exceptional man in many respects. He was political editor, I think appointed by Boris Johnson, of The Spectator, the venerable conservative weekly magazine. He was also the political commentator with The Daily Telegraph until 2016. And he was twice Journalist of the Year in Britain. He has also written a book, a number of books, but one in particular springs to mind, really, The Assault on Truth, Boris Johnson, Donald Trump, and the Emergence of a New Moral Barbarism. Peter, good afternoon to you, and thank you very much for joining us. Few people in journalism or in England would be more familiar with Mr. Johnson than you. You were colleagues, and you've seen him a lot. Where is he now, do you think, after what was not a particularly convincing performance in the Commons yesterday?
Fighting for his political life is the answer to that. But he's not dead yet, politically. So it reminds me a little bit of the final stage of the film The Terminator 2, where the man from that sort of horrible machine from the future tries to stay alive when he's been thrown into that sort of molten iron pool. Many people would have seen that film, and he keeps on changing shape in order to attempt to get out. That very final scene of Terminator 2. This is, as I think I told you last time we spoke a few weeks ago, Eamon, Johnson is finished, but it is taking a lot of doing to get for him to go. And this is really rather remarkable. You described very eloquently, very accurately, the circumstances of this this party last in 2020, which is the details of which have now emerged, and on top of many other parties. I mean, it is a gross breach of duty. It's probably criminal, as you pointed out. Where would the Irish Taoiseach be if he had been found to have conducted himself in the same way? And it's worth bearing in mind, of course, there have been all kinds of other breaches of the ministerial code, of basic ethics. But that is Mr. Johnson. He's still there. He, if you knocked on the door of Dining Street, you'd find him there, with his wife, Carrie, and his team around him. And, most people close to Mr. Johnson, I've spoken to one or two people, in his, sort of familiar with the situation, think he can survive.
Yes, I mean, I gave a title to your book, which was incomplete, The Assault on Truth, Boris Johnson and Donald Trump and the Emergence of a New Moral Barbarism. As well in that title is the phrase, the triumph of the political class. It does seem to me, watching from here, that this is a moment for the Conservative Party as well. I mean, there are people, I saw Sir Roger Gale, who has called for Johnson to go on the grounds that he misled Parliament. Sir Roger Gale, and there's another figure that comes to mind, Dominic Grieve, a former Attorney General, no longer now in Parliament. He was a Remainer, former Attorney General, as I say. He didn't get re-elected because of his opposition, very forthright opposition, to Johnson. They seem to me to represent, I lived in England for 17 years, as did many Irish people, and I have a great fondness and respect for many English people, but I don't have a fondness, I must say, for the type of people one sees in the Tory cabinet. But Sir Roger Gale and Dominic Grieve seem to me to be, if it's not too naive to say so, the best kind of English people. Decent, honourable, and fully understanding the obligations they have as public representatives.
Yes, other names should be added to that list.
Of course.
Most importantly, Douglas Ross, the leader of the Scottish Conservative
Party,
who has called for Mr. Johnson to quit. That's a momentous step. And I think I'm right in saying that the Welsh Secretary has not supported Mr. Johnson, and nor has, I think I'm right in saying, Brandon Lewis, not Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, has been very noticeably silent. There was a whole series of statements by the cabinet, members of the cabinet, and of support for Johnson. And Brandon Lewis is not among them. Douglas Ross has actually gone out, taken the extreme lengths of just saying that Johnson must go, as has Roger Gale and one or two others, actually. So it's clearly on a knife edge. I think one observation, though, is that those who are supporting Johnson, that includes the two cabinet ministers who are felt to be most likely to get his job even when he goes, that is to say Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and also Liz Truss, the Foreign Secretary, they are supporting Johnson. And what we have here is a situation where politicians are really putting their own reputation on the line now, jeopardizing their own reputation. In fact, by supporting Johnson, you are effectively saying you're condoning gross misconduct.
Yes. Now, you have chronicled Johnson's lies online. It's a remarkable piece of work, and political lying has been a cause, if you like, that you have embraced and with a vengeance, because you believe, rightly, of course, that at some point there's a price to pay. The question of Johnson's future, he has been here so many times before, has he not? In journalism, he was sacked by the Times for making up a quote. Max Hastings, a former editor, I think, of his, said memorably a long time ago, I'd say more than 10 years ago, the day, if he ever becomes prime minister, I will be on the first plane to some awful dictatorship. I can't remember which one now. And of course, Hastings is a traditional conservative and a very distinguished military historian. It's not new, is it, this manifestation of Johnson?
Well, certainly we've had a series of really abominable events, actually. The whole Wallpaper Gates episode, where the Prime Minister spent approximately £200,000 on sort of redecorating the private flat in Downing Street, which he gets sort of grace and favour, and then realised he couldn't afford it and scuttled around the place trying to get some sort of donors to support that. All of which raises huge questions. And there was an investigation into him by the ethics advisor in Downing Street, it looks like he misled the Downing Street ethics advisor.
Lord Guyte,
the former private secretary to the Queen and the former diplomat, and a man of some great standing. And Johnson misled Guyte, and there's quite an exchange of letters. It's very I think officials like Guyte feel they're not proper for them to actually pull the plug. Make a statement which would lead Johnson to resign, because I think there is a doctrine which we didn't really realize, that officials will not kill off a prime minister.
Yes.
The view is that the voters put him in and it's up to the voters to take him out. Well, this gives the license to Johnson to behave in a way which, if you sort of told me that a British prime minister would behave in this way even 2 years ago, you'd say that person can't survive, they must resign. But here, there he is, despite having, I've got a list, it's growing, he's misled parliament. That was supposed to be a resigning offence. He's done so, and I've got a list on it. It's up there on my website more than 30 times, and actually the full list will be about 50 by the time I've brought it up to date. Mr. Johnson lies so often to Parliament now that he just can't keep up with it. He's like painting the fourth bridge, as you would say. Once you've finished, it's just a permanent task. And so he's behaving in a way which is quite extraordinary. Terrible. He's bringing great shame on Britain, great shame on the Conservative Party. When he resigns, which he will do, he will resign in disgrace, which has never happened. Not even Neville Chamberlain in 1940 didn't resign in disgrace. He resigned because he had the wrong policies and felt a better war leader. But there was nothing disgraceful about Johnson. Will resign in personal disgrace, and that will happen. The question is when.
I understand there's been some revisionism about Neville Chamberlain, but that's a discussion for another day.
But what I'm meaning to say, book.
I know exactly what you're saying. I want to. This puts Sue Gray, who is a civil servant from the Cabinet Office, who was described on Newsnight last night as being steely, in other words, rigorous, shall we say, she has been charged with investigating a raft of allegations about various parties, and her report is due within the next 10 days. But as you point out, Peter, she is in a very difficult situation, isn't she?
Yeah, Sue Gray, by the way, who hadn't realised this until I read a profile of her. She gave up the civil service to get married to a pub landlord in Northern Ireland, and she was the
really?
She ran a pub in Northern Ireland for several years, and so she's lived a bit.
Right.
It's feisty, but I mean, the problem she has, these reports to two people. One is the cabinet secretary, Simon Case, who's greatly diminished figure. He was appointed basically because Johnson got rid quite disgracefully of the cabinet secretary, the most senior civil servant in Britain, who he inherited.
Yes,
indeed. And put in this 40-year-old young shaver called Case, who is not up to the job and attended one of these parties and is a shambles and carries no weight. But that he is the, and it's great tragedy. And one of the things about Johnson is that he contaminates all around him. Anybody who comes close to them, him, is tarnished. And so poor Simon Case, who was a promising civil servant, is now a widely despised figure, even though he's the cabinet secretary. Sue Gray reports to Case. She also reports effectively to the Prime Minister. And so she is carrying out a report on the behavior of her two bosses.
Yes.
So that's the first thing. And that's now, I dare say she had to put up with some pretty tough customers in that pub in Northern Ireland. But so maybe she can deal with that. But the other thing is this doctrine that is it the job of a civil servant to come to a judgment which would cause the Prime Minister of the day to resign, to get himself or herself in this case involved in democratic politics.
Just in passing, I should point out, as you may or may not know, he lied to our Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, at the time about the Northern Ireland Protocol. And simultaneously, he was telling a different and equally persuasive lie to the DUP. And that has led, and of course, he was lying to the European Union because he had no intention of honouring the international agreement he signed to achieve Brexit in the time frame that he needed to win his 80-seat majority in the election. All of those lies, of course, could have grave consequences for this island, including threatening that we might have a hard border here. But there's another figure I'm interested in, and I'm sure Boris Johnson is interested. Dominic Cummings seems to be at the heart of this story in the sense that he is believed to be the leaker of some of this stuff, quite a lot of it, and he appears to be conducting what might be called Operation Get Boris, his methodology being drip, drip, bang. Mm. So we've had the drip, drip. What do you make of Cummings, who was a central figure in the achievement of the Brexit victory? And I should say for our listeners that Peter was a supporter of Brexit, who at the last moment, or virtually the last moment, had second thoughts and wrote a fascinating piece, Hold On a Minute. But Cummings is a slogan merchant, and he invented these slogans, didn't he? Get Brexit done and all of that, and went to Downing Street as chief advisor to Boris Johnson. Mm. They fell out. Cummings is a menace, isn't he?
Well, yeah, well, let's say that I have no current knowledge of exactly what or what he hasn't done. But the narrative in Whitehall at the moment is that these emails, photographs, etc., many of them are coming from Dominic Cummings, who worked. He was hired, as you say, in July, August 2019, and he remained as senior advisor to the Prime Minister until for about 12 months. He took Britain. He advised Johnson in taking Britain out of the European Union, and then he advised Johnson on the general election. And he hung around for quite a long time after that. And then there was reportedly quite a significant power struggle for the Prime Minister's year between Dominic Cummings and Carrie Simmons, as she then was, then the Prime Minister's fiancée, now his wife, for control over how things were run. And the narrative is, and I can't say whether it's true enough, but this is what informed people seem to say, is that Cummings lost, and he then left. And he left with him, according to this narrative, a trunk full of information, documents, emails, etc. which have been deployed against the Prime Minister. I cannot say for certain whether that's true or not, but this is what you, we are. Yeah. Now, and that would, one of those would have been this notorious email, which from the Prime Minister's private secretary to approximately 100 people in Downing Street, inviting them to a party, a bring a bottle party, at a time when, yes, as you very eloquently described, the rest of the nation was in lockdown. We weren't able to see our loved ones, our dying relatives, etc. Now, and so, but the Dominic Cummings was in Downing Street when that party was held, and he obviously, the theory is, it is being said that he released that email. Well, he is a very skillful political operator, Cummings. He has an agenda. He feels that Britain would be better governed without Johnson. It's very hard to argue that. He calls him the shopping trolley in his sort of rambling but sometimes brilliant blogs, which he publishes himself. And he certainly, he is a part of that story, of this long running and very tragic and awful story. If that narrative is true, when we can expect future developments, future revelations.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yes, now I notice, Peter, that the British press today, the Telegraph in particular, and the Mail, they are papers, the Telegraph, of course, where Johnson has a close relationship with all concerned, having been a columnist there and doubtless something he would go back to. And you were a very senior journalist in the Telegraph and an award-winning journalist whilst there as chief political commentator. And you know Johnson very well. What's he like in human terms, if that's not too personal a question to ask?
I just talked about my own experience with Mr. Johnson, was he hired me to go and work at the Spectator. I worked there 4 years. I really enjoyed working with him. He was extremely smart, a pleasure to, as a colleague. I could see him before he became Prime Minister, but if he governed Britain the way he governed the Spectator, well, he wouldn't have been around much, but he would have been a very creative presence, allowing people to get on with their job with a lot of encouragement and standing up for them when they, as I did occasionally, in fact, got myself into trouble. But he hasn't governed like that. He, as you said again at the start, he got rid of who immediately got rid of some of the most distinguished people, Ken Clark, the former Chancellor, Rory Stewart, my view probably ought to be Prime Minister. We were well governed. The old fashioned Tories, he just got rid of them. He hired Cummings, which I didn't approve of. And I thought was wrong. And then, he's part of a clique. Another matter we haven't raised, but it's very important, is donors, these very rich.
Lord Brownlow was one. He's the wallpaper.
He's Mr. Wallpaper donor. Yeah.
And he had a pet project called a kind of recreation of a.
The Great Exhibition.
The Great Exhibition, yes.
Of Brexit or something like that.
Yeah.
I want to be careful what I say because I don't want to say anything which is false, but the suggestion, I really don't know. The suggestion is, and that seemed to appear in the WhatsApp correspondence, which was eventually published between Lord Brownlow, I think he's Lord Brownlow, isn't
yes.
he? And like so many Tory donors, he's appeared. I don't know whether there is those who say, there's a connection between peerages and Tory donations.
Never.
But I actually completely think that couldn't possibly be true. It's unthinkable that posts of honour like that should be up for sale. So I reject that idea totally. Anyway, Lord Brownlow was, Johnson asked for some money. And then he also, the chorus, this thing of asking for money also had an exuberant moment from Johnson, in which he said that he was all up or was interested in this exhibition, which Lord Brownlow wanted. One of the interesting things in that WhatsApp conversation. But I was really thinking much more broadly that the influence of big money, in the Conservative Party,
yes.
Is very noticeable. Leaving totally aside the matter of Lord Brownlow, actually, it's very noticeable. Johnson's relationship with donors in general is something which I think when this sordid, I'm afraid to say there's no other word, sordid, unhappy and undignified and shameful period in our national history does come to an end, we need to unpick what went wrong. One of the answers will be the power of the donors over the Conservative Party.
Now, the Conservative Party, renowned for its ruthlessness, again, as somebody pointed out, I think it was on Newsnight last night, Margaret Thatcher was re-elected in 1987 as Prime Minister post the Falklands War, of course, with a majority of 102. By 1990, she was gone, the poll tax. So there is a sense in which once the Tory party understand that their leader won't deliver, it doesn't take long. How do you envisage the end of Johnson? Because as you said, I think, and many people have also commented, he has survival instincts that are quite extraordinary.
Well, I don't know about survival instincts. I think what he has is a sort of shamelessness.
Yes.
Which is quite extraordinary. Anybody with a faint sense of decency would have quit with an apology, and that would have been that. Instead of which, he is carrying on. Now, for the time being, there are two things I think which can, at least two things which can do for him. The first one is the Tory party itself. Will Tory MPs feel so shocked and appalled as they should do by the behaviour of Mr. Johnson that they demand that he should go? And there is a well-trodden sort of system of getting rid of a Tory leader. It involves putting in letters. I think it's 15 or 20% of Tory MPs.
Yeah, 54 is the number, I think.
54 is the current number. To the chairman of the backbench 1922 committee. And we don't know how many letters have been put in, but it doesn't seem that. And then you call for a leadership election or an election about the status of the leader, and then he or she might get voted out. Now that can happen. It can be accompanied by cabinet resignations. That would be powerful. But of course not necessarily fatal for Mr. Johnson, the Labour cabinet resignations. I'm very struck that none of the Tory papers have so far said Johnson must go.
Yes.
You know, the Telegraph, or that would be a powerful moment. So at the moment, they haven't done that. Instead, he's apologized. Sue Gray, who we've been discussing, we wait for her report, and then life goes on. The second thing is the Metropolitan Police. On the face of it, it would appear that Mr. Johnson, or at any rate, as a kind of a country, there was a party in his garden. He broke the law, and there should be an investigation by the police. Charges should be laid. He was the host. I don't think he put out the invitations, but he was, it was his garden.
His principal private secretary put.
Can we get to the point where the sense of national disgust is so great that Johnson just becomes a pariah and somebody? And I think maybe we can, that people just don't refuse to take him seriously at all.
Yes, just to finish with this point, really, Peter, I was very struck watching television yesterday, being a political anorak, at the vox pops with ordinary British people who had suffered through bereavement, in particular, in that moment of May 2020, or approximately to that day. And in those testimonies, you saw something that is admirable in the British people that I found, and many of my friends who were from here, we worked and lived in England, in my case, for 17 years. The basic decency and sense of fairness that the British pride themselves on. It's sometimes derided by Republicans and others as not existing. I think it does exist. And it was palpable in those testimonies of people who were disgusted by his smirking and his lying and his apparent heartlessness, really. So it is real, that feeling. And is that could pose a threat if it can find a political manifestation?
Yes, I think it can. I think he will be driven out in a wave of disgust. I should say to you, the two or three people I spoke to who really are close, I say close, have a well-placed and have a really serious and shrewd understanding of British politics, and the Conservative Party in particular. One of them is a household name. They thought that Johnson would cling on.
Yes. Yep.
That was the view. I disagree. And I think because you and I just look on with complete horror that we can't believe that a British prime minister can behave like this and survive in office.
Yes.
But the view of the insiders at the moment is that he will survive, certainly for the time being.
Okay. We're very grateful to you, Peter, for joining us. Understand, Peter Oburn is one of the great British journalists, really, and as much as anything for his integrity and his courage. He has a website, which I'm sure our readers would like to go to. It's called BorisJohnsonLies.com. It's a monumental task, and it's growing by the day, I have to say, Peter. But we're very, very grateful to you for joining us, and thank you very much indeed. And thanks to all our listeners. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.